This is Razia Iqbal with NewsHour live from the BBC in London. Now to a report that makes for bleak reading and reflection. It says that the number of people needing humanitarian assistance is at its highest in decades. Some 168 million are in need, and projections state that more than 200 million will be in need of assistance by 2022. The figures are from a report published today by the UN Office of the Coordination of Humanitarian Assistance, OCHA. Mark Lowcock is the Under Secretary General for Humanitarian Affairs and Emergency Relief Coordinator.
So the big message is that in 2020, a record 168 million people around the world will need humanitarian assistance just to survive. And that's about 15% more than we were projecting a year ago for 2019. So it's a bleak message, essentially. And the reason more people are going to need help is because of the combination of conflict, climate change events, more big storms and more droughts, and also more pandemics and disease events.
Let's look at the issue of conflict first then. Is there something specific that has changed in the way in which you were projecting the impact of conflicts around the world?
I think what we've seen over the last 5 to 10 years is the gradual impact of changes in the geopolitical situation. Some of the things that we're dealing with this year in 2019, like the Libya conflict, for example, I think in previous eras would have been prevented by intervention by the, if you like, the great powers earlier on. And more of those problems are getting out of control and going on for longer. We've seen the same thing in Syria. We've seen the same thing in Yemen. In some places, of course, that's been a problem for a long time, like Afghanistan. But we're living in an era where the world is finding it harder to prevent and then to control conflicts when they break out, partly because of the complexity and the underlying drivers of the conflicts, but also because of some things that we didn't see 10 or 15 years ago. The emergence, for example, of globally interconnected terrorist groups, as we've seen in Iraq and Syria, as we see now elements of in, for example, northeast Nigeria, in Somalia, in Afghanistan. Those groups which don't really buy into some of the accepted standards of behaviour, like if there's a conflict, civilians should be protected. That's definitely been one of the things that's changed. But it's a broader, more complex picture than just that. Conflicts all have causes. Sometimes they're economic, sometimes they're pressures on resources. But when you add it all up, what we see is we're living in a period of exceptionally high numbers of people who need humanitarian assistance just to survive.
And when you talk about the areas where the combatants in a conflict are not adhering to what? International humanitarian law specifically?
Yes, what we are seeing is a growth in the number of attacks on civilians and civilian infrastructure, and also growing number of attacks on aid workers. You know, when I was first doing this kind of work more than 35 years ago, the basic deal everybody bought into is that you wouldn't attack the Red Cross or the NGOs because everybody understood they were there to help people neutrally and irrespective of, you know, what the combatants were doing. Unfortunately, we've seen an erosion of those standards.
Would you say that of the countries that you've mentioned where we know there have been protracted conflicts, that Yemen is still at the top of that list? It's the worst.
In 2020, again, Yemen will be the place where we have the biggest humanitarian problem. 80% of the population will need humanitarian assistance to survive. And for the last 2 years, we've raised a lot of money, record amounts of money, to look after those people. Now, we are actually projecting for 2020 a better year in Yemen. Our appeal is about 20% smaller than it was for 2019. And the reason for that is because we do now believe there is a chance, a hope of bringing the conflict to an end through the peace process that the UN is supporting. So, you know, Yemen is one of the places where we can see a bit of light at the end of the tunnel, but it all depends on what the men with guns and bombs decide to do through these peace talks.
Let's look at climate change now, because clearly there's an overlap to some extent. In what way have you looked in more detail at climate change and the impact of that?
Well, the world leaders are all gathered in Spain right now talking about this. It's absolutely unequivocally clear to me, as somebody whose job it is to go and look at all these disasters, that we're seeing both more very violent storms. I was in the Bahamas in September, which was absolutely devastated by Hurricane Dorian. But we're also seeing more frequent and severe droughts. So next year, unfortunately, the scientists are telling us there's a significant chance of another El Nino event. So that could have really a devastating effect on the countries of southern Africa and also potentially in the Horn of Africa.
When you talk about the need for people to look at the causes and to act earlier and in a preventative way, that requires a much more consistent multilateral way of thinking about the world. And we also know in the last 5 years or so, if not less, leadership around the world, not least the United States, is moving towards a unilateral approach to things. And I wonder to what extent you are concerned about that.
So there's another paradox here. On the one hand, we have record fundraising, and the United States remains the most generous contributor to the UN appeals, which I coordinate. On the other hand, we have a world which is getting less effective at dealing with the underlying problems. And I think that that's something that really needs to be higher up the agenda of world leaders, both on the climate change side, but also in dealing with some of these conflicts, which are increasingly protracted. We've got countries which have been in conflict for 8 or 10 years, where it's, you know, very difficult, therefore, for anyone to recover or to find a way forward. The world really has to get better at dealing with those sorts of problems, and that requires leadership.
Give me some sense of the kinds of people that you met in putting together this report, because you clearly went to some pretty terrible places around the world affected both by climate change and conflict.
So this is the most comprehensive and authoritative and sophisticated analysis of its sort, and it's built up partly by hundreds of data sources from reports and so on. But we also interview hundreds of thousands of people caught up in conflicts and crises, and the staff of NGOs and the Red Cross and UN agencies, and I travel around and listen to people's stories. And what you see if you go to meet displaced people in the Congo or in northeast Nigeria or Somalia, all of places I've been to in the last few months, is you meet people who in every material respect are just like you and me, but life's lottery has been kinder to you and me than to them. And people weep and shake as they tell their stories. What they want is a chance to recover and move forward. And that's what the humanitarian system is trying to provide them with. But there's really no difference between those people and the rest of us, except that we're luckier.
Sobering thought on which to end today's edition of NewsHour. That was Mark Lowcock, the Undersecretary General for Humanitarian Affairs and Emergency Relief Coordinator at OCHA.